Blog Talk Radio.
This is Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. Beautiful, clear Saturday morning here in Denver, Westminster area, where I am. And I know it's beautiful in Boulder, where my dear friend and co-host, Crystalyn Beek Larson, is. Crystalyn, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. It's bright and early this morning. We have an interesting topic today that I think will be of particular interest to your Rancho Book readers. It's something that's been bandied about many, many times, and over the course of my involvement with the Urantia book, which has been 36 years, people have really strong opinions about it. I hope we'll get some folks to call in and tell us what they think. We've invited two great guests, longtime readers, both of them, and with a tremendous experience in this. The first one is Bayes Sarmast. Bayes has been reading the book since for over 20 years. Am I correct, Bayes?
Almost. Close, yeah.
Close, yeah, okay. And he has been on expeditions to find the garden and has been actively involved from the get-go, and he most recently has led a group through the creation of UBIM, Urantia Book International Ministries, and they've done some impressive work with that. I've been in on a lot of their deliberations and done very impressive work and created some amazing documents, and the tenets and the philosophy is just really outstanding. And also we have Dick Bain. Dick has been reading for 40 years or more, and found his book from Meredith, Dr. Meredith Sprunger, and has in the last decade, I think, been intricately involved in creating the Spiritual Fellowship, which is yet another religion based on the teachings of the Urantia book. So here are two religious movements based on the teachings, and so we have two men that are very much involved in this and have put the effort forth to do this. And we don't have any protagonists here, but I hope we wouldn't, you know, I hope if you feel really strongly against creating a Urantia religion, you'll call in and tell us why. But for now, we're going to dwell on their thoughts on why we should have a religion based on the Urantia book. So, and if either one of you gentlemen want to add something to what I've said, that's fine. And if not, I'll let Bayes take it away and throw out the opening salvo.
Well, good morning. I'm glad to be with you today. This is a very heady subject. We've been working on this full-time for about a year. And the first thing I would begin with is to inform people that this isn't really about whether we should or should not have a religion, because we already have a religion. It's about 100 years old. The Urantian religion began about the first with the first person who believed the revelation and shared it with another. So right now, after almost a century, we have a community. We have a group of teachings that we revolve around. We have different groups with various interests. We've gathered together to disseminate the book, to simplify its teachings, to share it with the world. We have prayers, and we have worship. We get together every once in a while. That's a religion. We already have this religion. So it's not really about whether we're going to start a religion or not. Really, you know, to put it accurately, it is difficult to understand through the Urantia book without confusion what they're talking about, because in reality, our religion is the religion of personal experience, personal spiritual experience. That was Jesus' religion. That's our religion. But Urantia book talks about two different types of religion, and the distinguishing of these two different types is vital to ending the confusion about the subject. Basically, the true religion, and I'm going to read you a quote from the Urantia book itself, paper 195, section 10, paragraph 11, that's going to help distinguish the difference. It says, "The true church, the Jesus Brotherhood, is invisible, spiritual, and is characterized by unity, and not necessarily by uniformity. And this brotherhood is destined to become a living organism in contrast to an institutionalized social organization. It may well utilize such social organizations, but it must not be supplanted by them." So right there, they're giving us a understanding of the difference and the priorities. The true church is an invisible, spiritual, living organism. We've already been a part of this church. There's probably millions of people that belong to this invisible spiritual church around the world and don't know it because it's not socialized. Now, it says that this invisible brotherhood may utilize social organizations as long as it's not supplanted by them. In other words, as long as you don't forget the true spiritual connection with the Father, then and you don't let this social organization supersede the importance of that connection and relationship, then you can use it. I'm going to give you another quote, actually from Jesus himself. When Abner and Andrew went up to him and asked him questions about how they should treat the various problems that come up with their socialization of Jesus' religion of personal experience, he replied, he said, "I am concerned only with your personal and purely religious problems. I am the representative of the Father to the individual, not to the group." Remember, this was his mission. "If you are in personal difficulty in your relations with God, then come to me and I will hear you and counsel you in the solution of your problem. But when you enter upon the coordination of divergent human interpretations of religious questions and upon the socialization of religion, you are destined to solve all such problems by your own decision. Albeit I'm ever sympathetic and always interested, and when you arrive at your conclusions touching these matters of non-spiritual import, provided you are all agreed, then I pledge in advance my full approval and hearty cooperation." Here's another one. We're getting another quote where the difference is really distinguished. Jesus' mission was only for pure spiritual problems, relations with God, personal. When it comes to the group, he said, "I'm not going to touch that because it wasn't part of the mission." But he says he will give his full approval and hearty cooperation when we come together to coordinate the divergent human interpretations of religious questions and the socialization of religion. So that's what we're doing. We're coordinating all these different people with different beliefs, with these interpretations about religious questions. And we're socializing his religion so that we can work as a group. And those are the quotes I'm going to start with, just so that you know there is a distinguishing difference and what we're doing. Dick, you want to take it away from there?
I understood that you probably need to leave early, so you probably ought to carry on if you have more to say rather than me jump in at this point.
No, actually, I'm going to stay with you for about an hour, hour and a half.
But yay!
Yeah, my wife, she was supposed to have something going on today that was canceled. I have all the time we need. What I did is, after you say something, Richard, I did bring out a collection of quotes from the Urantia book to basically justify and validate what we're saying and what we're doing. And, you know, what happened was about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, we launched this discussion on the Truth Book Forum, and there was a lot of heated response. People went kind of unpredictably berserk about it, kind of. It is a very heated topic because of the confusion that I believe stems from the Urantia book itself. It's when it comes to the socialization of the religion of personal experience, even the celestials get a little jittery about it. But at the same time, they say that it's inevitable and then proceed to tell us how to do it correctly and avoid the problems of the social organizations that have come before. And this is something that really has to be understood. It is a dangerous thing to do in that when you crystallize teachings of truth, problems may arise in the future where people get fixated on those beliefs and refuse to grow. It's supposed to be dynamic and flexible, able to grow constantly with each passing generation. And what happens when you crystallize even a small part of it, people become fixated on it and they refuse to grow. They hold on to that part and refuse to allow any future teachings or revelations to enter the picture, which is what's happened with Christianity, with Islam, and many other religions. So being able to distinguish the difference between true personal experience, spiritual experience, and the socialization, bringing all those divergent interpretations of religious questions into a standard form where a group can function with them and through them. Being able to do that correctly is what the Urantia book teachings are all about. And Richard, did you want to interject here?
That's sort of a segue into what I was going to talk about. One thing I was going to talk about, the spiritual fellowship. Is this a good time to get started on that?
I would just like to share, Baze, you touched on the dangers of socialized and institutionalized religion. Actually, socialized religion, they don't give us any dangers at all. But the dangers are when religion becomes institutionalized. So I just want to make that distinction, and there's actually a really good quote in the book on that. You know which one I'm talking about, Baze?
There's so many.
There are so many. When religion
there are
becomes
paragraphs. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I will look that up, I want the book to be able to delineate exactly what those dangers are, the benefits of socialized religions versus the possible detriments of institutionalized religion. Doesn't say organized.
Right.
It's very clear. Institutionalized. It becomes fossilized, crystal. You know, it's crystallized. It's just rigid, unyielding, unbending, unadaptable. It can't change. And so I just want to make that distinction, and then I'll look that quote up and read it in a little bit. So go ahead, Dick.
Okay. I thought I would talk about the spiritual fellowship, its history a little bit. And it really started before the spiritual fellowship existed. Dr. Meredith Sprunger and his society started the Christian Fellowship of Students of the Urantia Book. I hope I got the title right. And one of his projects was to try to get, he sent out letters to many, many, many ministers trying to get them to look at the Urantia Book, and had very limited success. But in about, I think it was about 2000, that Meredith and Sherilyn Henry organized the spiritual fellowship. And like many enterprises, it started out with a lot of people, a lot of enthusiasm, but gradually people fell away when the excitement died down. And several people left the board due to philosophical differences. I was invited.
They left the board of the Spiritual Fellowship, or they left the board of the Urantia Brotherhood?
No, it's the board of the Spiritual Fellowship.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I was invited to join the group by Meredith in about 2002 to be the head of a committee, and then later he asked me if I would take on the job of treasurer, which I did, and was part of the board then. And a few years ago, I was then asked to take over if I would take over as webmaster of the Spiritual Fellowship website, which I did. My view is that Spiritual Fellowship wasn't attempting to create invent a new religion based on the Urantia book, but rather build a religious organization to enable groups to form for the purpose of worshiping and serving together. So we built the infrastructure to further and assist groups, to foster and assist groups that would be associated with the Spiritual Fellowship and be known as fellowships. And we had the attitude, build it and they will come. But unfortunately, they didn't come. And one comment that's been made about this is that that making the support structure before the need existed was putting the cart before the horse. But I think there are quite a number of factors that mitigate against, at this time or in the past when we were trying to do it, forming the sort of groups that we had envisioned. I think first you need a critical mass. You need a certain number of people who are seeking a group to be a part of such a group. In my experience, as many people in study groups are intellectually interested in the Urantia book, but they really don't want to be part of a group that does spiritual practice. And I don't think that we did not aggressively publicize the fellowship idea, which maybe was a mistake, but it might not have made a difference. There's also a lot of anti-church sentiment in the Urantia community, which I'm sure we've all heard from time to time. So it could have been an idea before its time. But another thought that I had was that there are quite a number of Christian Urantians. They already have a spiritual community where they worship and serve, and they really don't need an additional, you know, community that's so scattered. And if people were unaffiliated and they wanted such a community, that might be a possibility, but we are such a scattered fellowship at this point. And so you might say, well, was the spiritual fellowship a failure? And I'd say, was alchemy a failure? I'd say it was not. It did not achieve its specific goal of converting lead to gold. But was alchemy a failure? No. In the pursuit of it, the techniques of modern science were born. Equipment was developed to analyze things. The various elements and compounds were characterized and discovered. And it was a vital step into the future of science. So I think maybe I'd like to think that the spiritual fellowship could be a step like that. I always think of failure. It's a process that failed to meet its goals, but it made a contribution to future projects or future progress.
Can you speak up just a little bit?
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm having a bit of a hard time hearing you.
Sorry. I don't have a strong voice. And I supported it because I thought that there would be folks within the Urantia community who would like to worship and to serve together. And I believe this is true, and it's a worthy goal, and eventually will come to pass. And I think it has to be an idea whose time has come, and nothing has the power of an idea, has more power than the idea, an idea whose time has come.
You're here.
And I've, something that And I had mentioned the Christian Urantians, and something I'm very concerned about is the future relationship between the Urantia community and the Christian church. But that's a whole other subject. That's what I wanted to say about spiritual fellowship.
Well, I think that is actually a very critical part of the discussion and subject today. So I would not discourage bringing that up, Dick.
Okay, I
found that quote, and I want to share that before we go too much farther, because I think it's pivotal into many Urantia book readers have come away from organized religions and institutionalized religions, and so they have a bad taste in their mouth. And my personal feeling is we have an opportunity to create something that is much better, but we tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater because we're so afraid of the detriments. And here are the, here's what the book says. There is a real purpose, and by the way, this is from paper 99, The Social Problems of Religion, very specific paper, so insightful, section 6, Institutional Religion. Okay, so it says there is a real purpose in the socialization of religion. It is the purpose of group religious activities to dramatize the loyalties of religion, to magnify the lures of truth, beauty, and goodness, to foster the attractions of supreme values, to enhance the service of unselfish fellowship, to glorify the potentials of family life, to promote religious education, to provide wise counsel and spiritual guidance, and to encourage group worship. And all live religions encourage human friendship, conserve morality, promote neighborhood welfare, and facilitate the spread of the essential gospel of their respective messages of eternal salvation. Okay, so those are the good things that happen when we socialize together about our religious beliefs. Now, the bad things, it says very clearly, as religion becomes institutionalized, its power for good is curtailed, while the possibilities for evil are greatly multiplied. The dangers of formalized religion are fixation of belief and crystallization of sentiments, accumulation of vested interests with increase of secularization, tendency to standardize and fossilize truth, diversion of religion from the service of God to the service of the church, inclination of leaders to become administrators instead of ministers, tendency to form sects and competitive divisions, establishment of oppressive ecclesiastical authority, creation of aristocratic chosen people attitude, fostering of false and exaggerated ideas of sacredness, the routinizing of religion and the petrification of worship, tendency to venerate the past while ignoring present demands, failure to make up-to-date interpretations of religion, entanglement with functions of secular institutions. It creates the evil discrimination of religious castes. It becomes an intolerant judge of orthodoxy. It fails to hold the interest of adventurous youth and gradually loses the saving message of the gospel of eternal salvation. So you can see how they're almost mirror images of each other, and I think our mission, should we decide to accept it, is to hone in on all of the great and wonderful purposes of the socialization of religion while doing our very best to avoid these pitfalls. But I don't get anywhere that we should altogether avoid socializing our religion entirely. I don't get that at all. And as Baze has pointed out so many times, the book says quite the contrary.
Well, you know, just to interject, Paula, those list of problems associated with institutional religion or what have you that you just read off, we speak about those things that we want to avoid in the future. But when I was reading that quote last night, it occurred to me that we've already made many of those mistakes. This is not a religion that we're going to create for a future. We've had a religion for almost 100 years. The fellowship, the foundation, what have you, all these different groups that have sprung up are in competition with each other, are antagonistic, or at least were to some great degree. The inclination to create administrators instead of ministers, the failure to reach out to the youth, the failure to adapt to modern times, all those, you know, I would say 75% of those mistakes we've already made.
And we haven't achieved hardly any of the benefits, really.
And these are all, we were already socialized with all these things that we're doing all year round together, all these groups, all these dissemination projects, all various projects, all these things that are cropping up. This is we're already socialized. The only thing that we would be doing next is to standardize it so that people can make some kind of sense out of it and do it correctly and avoid the pitfalls that we've already made.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead. Just have to.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I see exactly what you're saying. We have had a culture. Our culture has been one of secrecy. We've tried our best to keep this thing under wraps. And in the meantime, you know, we've stifled religious creativity, spiritual creativity. We've stifled ministry, for Pete's sake. You know, Crystalyn often points out that, you know, who do we go to marry us, to bury us? We have to go to some outside religious group. When we have a revelation that is so meaningful, so powerful, yet we're almost afraid to act for fear that whatever we do, it won't be good enough. You know.
Well, the good thing is that we have the instructions.
I would like
to do it correctly.
I would like to step in here too and say that. For those of us who have been ministering, either consciously choosing to dedicate our lives to that or being asked to be in a position where we are in a daily position of counseling others in need, in spiritual need, we become ministers. Through that process, we become trained and we become the people that others go to for spiritual counsel. And when we are in that position, we can see very clearly that we are not enough to meet the needs. We could spend all of our time, 24/7, every waking moment, ministering to the existing need, and we wouldn't be able to scratch the surface. So, you know, I feel personally as if I am involved with existing human and evolutionary religion as well as revelatory religion on a daily basis. And sometimes I wear my interfaith hat and sometimes I wear my Urantian hat, depending on the person I'm talking with and what their individual need is or what their needs are. And I found that I can be rather flexible because I believe, as you said originally, Baze, that all real religion is the personal relationship with God. And when you're talking with a believer, really a believer of any faith, when you come out of that frame of mind, you can minister across creedal lines fairly easily. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, can we take a call? We have two callers waiting.
Hold on. Let me, before you guys take a call, I can just imagine the questions are going to come up. Give me about 2 or 3 minutes to read some quotes from the Urantia book itself, would you?
Sure.
Because this is going to preempt a lot of the questions that I'm sure to come up. And I want to emphasize that, you know, after my experience talking about this and getting a lot of arguments this way and that, is that we are following a revelation. I'm not particularly interested in human opinions. I'm interested in what the revelation says. And let's listen to what the revelation says. I spent a few hours last night collecting these quotes. This is what I follow. This is my religion. And I follow its teachings implicitly, you know, absolutely. So let's listen to what it says. I already read those two quotes where we're told the difference between the personal, spiritual religion of personal experience and its socialization and the problems with this institutionalization. Let me read you a few quotes. This is from paper 87, section 7. Every inspiring ideal grasps for some perpetuating symbolism, seeks some technique for cultural manifestation which will ensure survival and augment realization. Now, why do they say that it will ensure survival? Are we afraid that the teachings of the Urantia book are going to die? In paper 97, we're told, it's difficult for religion to survive as the private practice of isolated individuals. This has ever been the error of the religious leaders, and this, I think, pertains to the Urantia book community to a T. This has been the error of religious leaders. Seeing the evil of institutionalized religion, they seek to destroy the technique of group functioning. That's an astounding statement to me. It's saying that when they see the evils of institutionalized religion, they actually set about to destroy the technique of group functioning. They don't want groups to function. They don't want any kind of group functioning. And that is a huge mistake. This has been ever the error of religious leaders, we're told. It says, in place of destroying all ritual, they would do better to reform it. And that's the key point. You're not here to destroy rituals, what's come before. We're supposed to reform it. Paper 87, we're told, notwithstanding that the cult has always retarded social progress, it is regrettable that so many modern believers in moral standards and spiritual ideals have no adequate symbolism. No cult of mutual support, nothing to belong to. This is one of those sentences that's like...
Could you read that again? I didn't hear that.
Sure. This is actually one of the reasons why there's so much confusion about the subject, because within one sentence, we have some very conflicting ideas. It says, paper 87, section 7, paragraph 3, notwithstanding that the cult, and remember, the cult is what the word that the Urantia book uses for religion, and didn't have any of the negative connotations that the word cult has today. So it refers to Christianity as a cult. Islam would be a cult. Judaism would be a cult. Any organized, socialized, institutionalized religion they refer to as a cult. Notwithstanding that the cult has always retarded social progress, wow, that's pretty bad, it retards social progress. Notwithstanding that, they say, it is regrettable that we don't have one. Isn't that funny?
Regrettable that we don't already have one.
Yeah, it's regrettable that we don't have, even though it retards social progress, it's regrettable that you don't have one, you modern people, you Urantia book readers. Isn't that funny? Well, why do they say that? Why would it be regrettable not to have something that they say always retards social progress? And this is the complexity of the issue and why there's so much confusion. In paper 103, section 5, we're told man develops best when the pressures of home, community, church, and state are least. But this must not be construed as meaning that there is no place in progressive society for home, social institutions, church, and state. There is great hope. Now, this is a great one for all these people that say, your Urantia book should never be a church, never be organized, never institutionalized. There is great hope for any church that worships the living God, validates the brotherhood of man, and dares to remove all creedal pressure from its members. In other words, they're not condemning churches. They're saying that it has to be changed. It has to be reformed. And if it's done correctly, there's great hope in it. Mm-hmm. Paper 87, from the dawn of civilization, every appealing movement in social culture or religious advancement has developed a ritual, a symbolic ceremonial, every single one of them. The early Christian cult, and remember, Christianity is another one of those topics where really, if you want to see what the Urantia book thinks, what the Revelators think about Christianity, you could go to any section and get 10 different opinions. Sometimes it's saying it's the greatest thing ever. Sometimes it's saying it's the worst thing that's ever happened. I mean, it's confusing. Listen, the Christian cult, this is 87, section 7, the Christian cult was the most effective, appealing, and enduring of any ritual ever conceived or devised. Paper 195, section 10, paragraph 12. Christianity has truly been one of the greatest powers for good on earth. Wow. Is this the institutionalized religion that everybody is so up against, saying that's so evil and compromises and this and that? It's been one of the greatest powers of good on earth? Wow. Not bad for evil institutionalized religion. Paper 99. You already read that section where it tells you what the roles of socialization of religion is, and there's a good number of them. Paper 87, regardless of the drawbacks and handicaps, every new revelation of truth has given rise to a new cult, and even the restatement of the religion of Jesus must develop a new and appropriate symbolism. Holy smoke, must. They're
must
not saying
develop.
Could. They're not saying may. Must develop a new and appropriate symbolism. Paper 87, section 7. Why are they saying this? Because, paper 87, the cult is the skeletal structure around which grows the living and dynamic body of personal spiritual experience, true religion. The analogy they've used in this sentence is very striking. They've compared the cult, which is the static, social, institutionalized version, is the skeletal structure around which grows true religion, the personal experience. So what they're saying, of course, without a skeleton, what happens to the body? It can't stand. It can't move. It can't function. You need, so when they compare the cult to a skeletal structure, they're saying that without it, that body's not going anywhere. It's dead. You need this skeletal structure, even with the drawbacks and handicaps.
That's the now, construct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It says, again, the new symbolism. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. Not only do they say that it has to be done, but then they give us instructions on how to do it. And if you have any problems with what our projects are about, then you're basically saying no to the revelation, because the revelation itself disagrees with you. The revelation itself not only says it has to be done, but proceeds to tell us how to do it and what pitfalls to watch out for. We're told that, again, the new symbolism must not only be significant for the group, but also meaningful to the individual. The forms of any serviceable symbolism must be those which the individual can carry out on his own initiative and which he can also enjoy with his fellows. If the new cult could only be dynamic instead of static, now they're not, listen to the way they're referring to it. They're not saying we wish that it would happen. The new cult, if the new cult could only be dynamic, they already know that the new cult is going to happen. They already know that the socialization is going to occur around this enlarged revolution of truth we know as the Urantia Book. If the new cult could only be dynamic instead of static, it might really contribute something worthwhile to the progress of mankind, both temporal and spiritual. Wow, they have great hopes for this evil cult. Paper 87. The old cults were too egocentric. The new must be the outgrowth of applied love. Must be. The new cult must, like the old, foster sentiment, satisfy emotion, and promote loyalty. But it must do more. It must facilitate spiritual progress, enhance cosmic meanings, augment moral values, encourage social development, and stimulate a higher type of personal religious living. The new cult must provide supreme goals of living, which are both temporal and eternal, social and spiritual. So we're told what it must do. We know that it's inevitable. It tells us in that section, Nature of Cultism, directly, that it's inevitable. It's going to happen. It has drawbacks. It has handicaps. It has problems associated with it if you don't do it right. Now, here's the way you do it right, and these are the pitfalls that you watch out for. This is what it teaches. And I have more, but that's enough for now.
Okay, so let's take a call. Some folks have been waiting quite a while, so
okay.
Hold on. 302, you're on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hello, Paula. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, this is Chris Lapine out in Delaware, and hi to everybody online. This time I'm actually on the ground and not trying to chat from an airplane. But I want to applaud you folks in the efforts to have a Urantia-based religion. And I've thought about this topic for a while, and I've thought about the objections to doing it and the benefits of it. But I remember back in 1996, there were a couple of us who got together and had a big discussion about this. Then the Spiritual Fellowship came up a few years ago from Meredith. But I look at it, and what I've realized is that I think that it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to emerge. But I see that a lot of the resistance to the idea of socializing, having an organization to help us socialize the religion, a lot of the resistance is just a function of a generation. Most of the people who got into the book and read the Urantia book are baby boomers, the vast majority. And the baby boomer generation went through negative experience like I did in church. It was, you know, it was fossilized, it was controlling, sometimes it was abusive, and it's just this you know, kind of this disgusting, a lot of it is a disgusting wreck of crystallization. So I think that the natural reaction of a lot of us was that. And I can even remember first approaching the Urantia book and not wanting to read the Jesus Papers because of the negative effects of institutionalized religion on my life. But through the years, I've come to realize that, you know, human beings are social beings. You know, we're not solitary messengers. We're not chronodex. We are social beings, and it's only natural that we get together and socialize. I mean, this call, this forum is a social forum. Whenever we email and we do those things, it's social. So to say that we shouldn't socialize religion is ignoring the benefits of socialization in general. I mean, human society, towns, villages, roads, the internet, blog talk, radio, the clothing that you wear, the food that you eat, it all comes from socialization. So why is it that we can make a tangible argument, a cogent argument, to not socialize another experience in our life, the most important experience, which is our experience of the Father? And I think that some of the resistance that you're getting is generational. I mean, it's not like we're the Middle Ages and you know, the Spiritual Fellowship has the monopoly on salvation. I think that's where institutional religion gets a lot of its power. But I think that the types of people who would be attracted to the Urantia book or a spiritual fellowship based on the Urantia book would be independent and would realize that the salvation comes directly from the Father. But I wholeheartedly support what you're doing, and I pray for your success.
Thanks.
I think one of the other things that comes into play and that really affects us, or that I've observed has affected us, is that when we become parents and mm-hmm. when we start to see the void in our children's lives,
yeah,
when we have not had some of these socialized, symbolic and ritualistic aspects of a religion for them to participate in, what has happened when they have been, when they, those have been lacking in a small community, in a family life, or in our broader community, you know, what has happened? Why is it that some of us who've been raised with a, and I'm going to stretch things a bit and say we were raised in a family where a Urantia religion was allowed to freely express itself, versus those who grew up in a family where it was not part of their family culture? Did they grow up with a sense that they were part of a movement, or did they grow up with a sense that, well, this is just something kind of strange and unusual mm-hmm. that my parents were involved in? And because we now have several generations that have come through this socialization experience, we have been able to identify some of those pitfalls by their fruits. Frankly, just by their fruits. What kind of different experience do we have when we are raised within some type of structure, whether it's local community or familial? I don't think that it necessarily has to be both or has been both. But there's a way in which it's approached that makes all the difference. I don't know if that's been very eloquent or very clear or cogent, but that's my observation. What do you think, so, Paula?
Well, I just wanted to thank Chris for making a comment and say, and thank you for the support, Chris. If you are interested in getting involved? Sounds like you already are involved with the Spiritual Fellowship, or maybe have been.
I was when it was first founded, but I can tell you that right now, and some of you know what I'm up to with the Study Group Strategy Committee. I've got a lot going on, and I'm maxed out right now. But
okay.
I'll pray for your success. But I guess I'll say one last thing, and that's that I thought a lot about the structure of an organization that might do this. But if you ensure that there are checks and balances in the organization, and if you ensure that power is not concentrated, and that leadership is turned over, and so forth. Then you're really going to diminish the possibility that you're going to have crystallization and the pitfalls. They're going to be there, but if you have self-correcting mechanisms, then they're going to be much less likely. You know, this book is going to, there are going to be all kinds of groups that spring up out of this book, and we can't control that. There are going to be fundamentalist Urantia book readers. There's going to be every flavor. But you know, maybe, and people are gonna participate in what they feel comfortable in, just like they do in the study group area. It's gonna happen. I think the main question now is how can it be guided down more productive and spiritual ways, away from the negative type institutional hierarchies that we have now. But I'm fully behind you and totally believe in what you're doing.
Thank you, bro.
You bet.
Thank you.
Okay. So shall we take another call?
I would interject here just for a second to say that, first of all, before I forget, Dick, the Spiritual Fellowship, which you've done just yesterday, you sent us a manual on how to train ministers, which looks like something that you guys all worked on for quite a long while.
Manual on ministry,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to be using that in modified form or straight off, I don't know, but I don't think of what you guys did as a failure. I think it was just the beginning of something that's going to snowball. I think the problem, as you and I discussed before, was that our numbers are very few. Just Urantia book readers, not just the readers, the believers and the doers. You know, reading a book is not going to turn you into a real faith son or daughter. A book is a book. The Urantia book itself says that words cannot define the truth. Only living can. if you live the spiritual life, the truth will reveal itself from within. Reading a book is not going to do it for you. Just because you're reading your Rasha book, so what? As we can see with so many of these public forums and so many of these strange people in our community, the real spiritual person is somebody who lives in, and that's the only one that's going to understand it with or without the Rasha book, because they have contact with their adjusters. But we discussed this, and, you know, I think the problem with the with what you were doing with the spiritual fellowship was that our numbers are just too few. And the really dedicated souls, the true faith sons and daughters, are very, very few. And they're scattered around the world. I think we did some kind of mathematical discussion of, you know, the Rasha book says there were 1,000 somewhat reserved destiny core members when the revelation was being presented, and we divided that by the population of the earth, and it was, the percentage was astounding. It was something like 0.0000005% of the population. It was extremely small, and it's still that way today. Maybe even smaller. I don't know. But the point is that we're scattered around the world, but the and are few in number. But the true faith sons and daughters are powerful beings, and we've been given this opportunity with the internet and being able to share so many of our experiences that we can do a lot of these things. It doesn't have to be live, it doesn't have to be in person. Of course, that's ideal, but we can't have that. This is not an ideal world. There's nothing ideal here. Everything is messed up, but we can bring these souls together and have them see each other, talk to each other, share projects, work together without ever living in the same city, in the same country, or even the same continent. So what we did is we started, actually this is the first time we're announcing it publicly. We've been working on this for about a year. We launched a website that just became operational this week, and it is www.ubim.org. That stands for the Urantia Book International Ministry. Again, that's UBIM, the Urantia Book International Ministry, .org, remember, not .com. And we have, besides relaying news items and keep, you know, providing quotes and ministry and so forth, we've also brought some new technological tools into the mix to do this very thing, to bring people together in worship and prayer and working together, you know, group functioning. And it doesn't really matter where you are. You could be isolated in the middle of nowhere in Alaska, and you'll be able to work with us, talk with us, see us, pray with us, and worship with us. And I really don't think that it's a big deal that you have to be in the same room in some kind of church. I don't care about that. If we simultaneously pray and worship together on a, you know, let's say some time that we agree on, and we can even see each other if we want to, or hear each other, and chat or send prayers to each other. That's group worship of the highest kind. So go to the website. Sorry,
Dave. Go ahead. And I just said it's also ministry of the highest kind.
Right. We have, there are some really interesting technological things that we've installed on the site. You can, I can, or anybody can transmit a live video broadcast of whatever you're doing. Your study group, your presentation, if you want to preach, you have something to say, or if we want to worship or pray together, we can actually do it live. All you need is a webcam and a microphone, and we can set you up so that whatever you want to say, whatever you want to show, can be transmitted live globally, and everybody around the world can join in and see you, and it'll be recorded. They can see it later if they want, and that's what, something that we're going to really start doing soon. In the next week or so, we're going to start having, I want to just pray. I'm sick of this overly intellectualized glut that this movement's got into. We have no group worship or prayer practically. All we do is read the book and talk and eat and whatever. I want us to really focus more on worshiping together. I feel the desire inside myself. I don't care if there's a million people watching or if there's nobody. If I'm alive, I'm going to do it. And it's probably going to be on Sunday around noon, the way it was on the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. Their public worship time was at noon on Sundays. And this is something that we're probably going to start doing next week. So this religion, regardless of what you feel about it, it's happening. It's going on right now. We've already created tenets, which is basically the core teachings of the Urantia book. You can view that online, ubim.org. We've also created the philosophy of living, which the Urantia book actually asks us to create. And you can see that as well. And we're going to start this prayer and worship program and see where it goes to. So I hope you'll join us. I think, with the Urantia book is a very intellectual book. It's very heady. It's very difficult to understand, which is why so few people dare to even open it. It looks like a gigantic encyclopedia. There's not even any pictures. I mean, it's daunting. The language, the terminology, it's extremely difficult. And that's why our movement has sort of become overly intellectualized, in my opinion. And we want to sort of deflect it a little bit and head it more towards worship and prayer. I think it's needed.
Beautiful. Okay, so let's take another call.
I have another comment, or at least a question to make. What do you think, Bays, in terms of parenting and that influence on your burning desire to have a religion within this movement?
It's vital. It's absolutely vital. Let me read you another quote from the Urantia book that's very pertinent to what we're talking about once you ask Crystal. It's in paper 91, section 5, paragraph 7. It says, but the minds of greater spiritual illumination should be patient with and tolerant of those less endowed intellects that crave symbolism for the mobilization of their feeble spiritual insight. The strong must not look with disdain upon the weak. Those who are God-conscious without symbolism must not deny the grace ministry of the symbol to those who find it difficult to worship deity and to revere truth, beauty, and goodness without form and ritual. In prayerful worship, most mortals envision some symbol of the object goal of their devotion. And what an astounding paragraph that is. I think it just may be that the Urantia community has been tainted with a little bit of snobbery. Now, let me explain what.
A little bit of what?
Snobbery.
Oh.
Snobbery. Let's look at this quote again. The minds of greater spiritual illumination should be patient with and tolerant of those with less endowed intellects that crave symbolism for their mobilization of the feeble spiritual insight. So we're told that there are some people that don't need symbolism, and there are a great many that do, and that they crave naturally. They crave it. They crave a sort of symbolism, a ritual, ceremony.
And didn't we just have a quote of the day recently about not preventing children from following their natural and creative ideas? If you have kids and you're talking about religious issues in the home on a regular basis and involving them in your experience, they will come up with all sorts of personal ideas about God and about religion and even about their own rituals. That's really quite fascinating to watch develop.
And it's a creature thing.
It is. It is a natural creature thing, yeah.
And you can't avoid it. You can't ignore it. You can't try to suppress it because it's not going to work. It's a natural creature thing. We are creatures. A big part of the problem, I think, in life in general on this planet as a human being is that we have the ability to know what is perfect or to sense it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
We know what's perfect. We know what it looks like. We know what it tastes like. We know it when we hear it and when we see it. But unfortunately, and we want to be perfect. So we know what is perfect, and we naturally want to be perfect. The only problem is that we can't be perfect. So there's this constant conflict between knowing what's the perfect situation or the perfect idea or the perfect life or whatever and the absolute inability to reach it. So, in that paragraph, we're told that those who are God-conscious without symbolism must not deny the grace ministry of the symbol to those who find it difficult to worship deity and to review truth, beauty, and goodness without form or ritual. So most mortals, as we're told directly, need symbolism in order to mobilize their feeble spiritual insight, in order to worship deity and revere truth, beauty, and goodness. Do we want them to do that? Do we want these people with feeble spiritual insight to worship? Do we want them to revere truth, beauty, and goodness? Well, then why are we denying them what they need, which is form and ritual? We're told that directly in the Revelation. Why are we denying it? Are we saying no? Why are we even here saying should we or shouldn't we? Your Revelation tells us that, yes, you should, and this is the way you should do it. So I think we're sort of ignoring what we're being directly told to do. This is not a question. It's an order from the celestials. And they tell us how to do it and to avoid the pitfalls. And it's not like before. These elaborations on what the pitfalls are and what the mistakes are, they didn't include this for nothing. And we've never had this before. The human race has never had this, such a clear explanation of what true religion is, of what a good socialized version of it is, what problems may arise, and how to avoid them. It's in black and white. It's never going to go away. We know exactly what the template looks like. We know how to do it and how to avoid the problems. So it's very straightforward and clear for me. And I take what it says very seriously, and I intend to fulfill my obligations, or, you know, it's basically what I see as orders from our spiritual superiors.
We have a caller, and we have several callers, you guys. It's great. It's a lively board. The call board is lit up. It's fantastic. But I want to make this one point, and then we really need to take a few calls. But Jesus said, remember when he walked with the apostles two and two? This was in his resurrection appearance, one of the 19 appearances he made after he resurrected. And he walked with them two and two along the lakeside, and he said to them, feed my sheep. Do you love me? Do you love me? If you love me, you will feed my sheep. You will feed them. And I think this is what you're talking about, Baze. And it just strikes a home run for me. You know, this thing is not given to us to just, build ourselves up and mentally masturbate with. It's not. It's been given to us to feed back to his sheep because they need it. And this is our responsibility. If it's not us, then who is it? Who will do this? If we are not to be ministers of a great and noble truth, if we are not to be ambassadors of another kingdom, which like he said, you know, you have foretasted it, and I have sent you back. From now on, you must live as though you have foretasted the glories of another world and been sent back as ambassadors of that other world. That's us. That is us. And if it's not us, then who is it? Who will reveal these great truths, if not us, that we are not alone in the universe, that we are beloved children of the Heavenly Father, that we are nurtured and watched over and tenderly administered and ministered to in every way, that we should not be afraid, that life is eternal. Who's going to say this if not us? You know,
we better have something more to say than read the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, people want to feel loved, and people want to know that they are loved. And that really is the underlying foundation of spirituality and of even personal religious experience, that acceptance of the belief or the thought or the faith that you are part of a familial relationship, that you are loved by the Creator, by the universe, by your fellow family members, your fellow community members. That sense of the need to be loved is something that has to come through another personality. It's not something that you can get through a book.
And I think that's also a really critical and very simple formula to follow in terms of, you know, do we need a ministry? Do we need a religion? Well, I can tell you personally that being on the other end of the phone or being actively out there ministering, there is just such a profound need. And
once you've done it,
is often coming from people who have all their philosophical questions answered. But
Right. What
do they need? They need to know that they're loved. They need a personal experience of that. So go on, Paul.
If you deny that, then you're doing what that quote I just read says, which is we're denying the grace ministry to those who find it difficult to worship and revere truth, beauty, and goodness without form or ritual. That's what we're doing. When we deny the socialization, when we deny reducing these to a tent or explaining this in simple form to people that can't understand it without form or ritual, then we're denying the grace ministry, which is what we've been doing. And this is the snobbery that I've been talking about, is we just throw a huge 2,100-page book on their lap and say, well, here you go. Well, what's that going to do? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, we have to be prepared for every contingency because God's children come in every shape, size, color, creed. And, you know, when I go to talk to somebody, my prayer is always, Father, let me give them something they can keep, something of you they can keep. Doesn't have to be the Urantia book. You know, that's my touchstone. You guys all know that, and I love it. I'll hold it up. I'll hold up Jesus with all my heart, you know. But I want to meet people where they are, and I think it's unwise to try to do otherwise. You have to meet them where they are. You wouldn't teach small child advanced concepts of math. You just wouldn't. You wouldn't think of it. You wouldn't pick a fruit that wasn't ripe. You wouldn't do it. And many, many people on this planet are not ready for the Urantia book. We know that. But they are ready to know that they live in a friendly, well-ordered universe. They are ready to know that they are the beloved child of an infinite, loving God. There are some things that every human is ready to know, I think. Shall we take a call, you guys?
Yes, please.
Caller 202, you've been on for a while. Do you have something to say?
Good morning. Good afternoon, Paula. This is George. Hi, everybody.
Hi, George.
Hi, George.
I just wanted to weigh in on the conversation about the Christianization of religion and the old concept that you've been talking about. I think the world has changed from the time the book was penned with regards to how information is disseminated. And one of the reasons why we have these centralized religions over the past centuries is because there was a central point where you would travel to go and convene to get information on religion. And hence a spin-off of a centralized religion, a crystallized scenario, grew from that whole paradigm. That is no longer the world that we live in, where information is at our fingertips from anywhere we are. So that in itself will not lend itself to any central authority owning information on religion. So we don't need to worry too much about this religion becoming crystallized or centralized, because the structure of the world has changed the way information is gathered by individuals, and these youngsters nowadays, the way they communicate with texting, twittering, and all that kind of stuff, they will be able to pass information amongst themselves without getting into a car and traveling to a church. So the system has changed. The world is different. So I like the idea this person has about the UBIM.org. That is a good step in the right direction. This cosmic forum also is a good step in that direction, where anybody from anywhere can participate in a religious experience or share their experience. So I wouldn't spend too much time worrying about the problem that we're going to have from a centralized religion, because that will never happen. And just to make a correction to the to this person, it was actually on Saturdays at noontime that Adam and Eve did their worship, and that is in paper 74, section 4, paragraph 4, section 6. So what I'm saying is that we need to put in place websites, communication portals that people can log on to share their experiences, to participate. But I don't see a centralized church in any way coming from the Rancho Book.
I agree with you.
Thank you, George. Was that all you had to say?
Yes, I'll just keep listening.
Okay, bro, I have a lot of calls here, so if you guys will bear with me, we'll take a few more.
Absolutely.
985, area code 985, you're on the Cosmic Citizen.
Yes, I've been listening, and I'm reading the chat room, and I kind of agree with Osima, and let's see, Cosmic Citizen, that truth, and I think ministry is an individual thing. Jesus was an individual minister, and we're all individual ministers. When we read the Urantia book, we're inspired. We're inspired by it. We're moved by it. We read it, no matter how advanced we are intellectually or not advanced intellectually. There's something that opens up within us. There's some truth in there that lights up everybody. If we turn it into a religion, then we have organization. We have things that people say and interpret, just as they did with the New Testament and the Bible. Jesus often said, read the Old Testament. The New Testament, a lot of it was to fix certain ideas so that egos that were involved in the creation of that and the rewriting of that could carry on. I look at the organized churches now. They're all ego-based. The Urantia book has no ego. It's not about ego. It's not about being smarter, knowing more spiritually. It is about the individual reading it and learning whatever they can learn from that and being part of the creation, the grand creation that we are. And to have it doused with dogma is not good. You know, we all have our own process, spiritual process. We all have our free will. And God wants that free will. God's experiencing through us, through that Urantia book, through the Bible, through the Old Testament, through the truth. And we have our revelations through that truth. We have our connection to the divine. That is superb. That is superior to any organized religion. And we become those ministers through the things that we say, the things that we do. We become a ministry, an individual ministry. And we spread that beauty individually. And that's how the universe is growing. And that's how spirit is growing throughout the universe, through that process, through that free will process, through that learning process. Jesus said we could do greater works than him. And that's not sacrilegious. That's the truth. Because if we take in the truth as we know the truth to be through our free will process, we become co-creators. We become creators. We're creating. We're evolutionizing the spirit. We're bringing it into some other form. This is what the Creator wants, to experience.
Caller, can you give us a name and where you're located?
Located in Louisiana, and my name is Rishi. I am located in New Orleans, Louisiana, and my name is Rishi.
Now, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Does anybody want to comment?
I'm going to be reading the chat room here. It's beautiful. I'm reading some beautiful things here.
It's pretty lively. Okay.
Yes.
Did you have anything else?
I've read the Urantia book, by the way.
Pardon me?
It was a stepping stone. It was definitely a stepping stone.
How long have you been aware of it?
I've been aware of it for a long time, and it was a stepping stone. And there were things that I had already knew, and it opened the floodgates to the knowledge that's already there in all of us. It was a stepping stone to opening those floodgates of truth. And I was seeking more truth. It helps you to seek more truth, to want to know more truth.
That
it's
it does.
Truth
that it
seeker.
Does.
That's
there
what it
know.
Is. And if you organize it and you turn it into a religion, you stunt the growth. You stunt the growth of what it is, because 100 years from now, you're onto your book. It's an evolutionary process, that book. The truth in it grows as we grow into spirit. It can't be tampered with that way. We've already seen what that does.
Yeah,
we've
but don't
seen
you think, though, haven't you found that in sharing many of the concepts that you found there with others, that you don't just share the book. You share some kernels and some nuggets of truth that were really life-changing for you, those things that you most needed to know, the things that you really got, I guess you could say, psyched out about. Those are the things that you share with others, because you don't really expect everyone you meet to have the same reaction to the book that you do. And there's an aspect of ministry that happens when you when you sort of synthesize down the most pertinent parts of it for those friends of yours in need who may not be at all interested in the overall philosophy and sort of encyclopedia of information about religion that we get there. Don't you think?
In the beginning, when I was reading the book, in the beginning, I was seeking other people that were reading the book. And then I had encountered maybe 10 people that had read the book, and we were having discussions. Then I realized those nuggets of truth that I was given were for me to internalize the way I needed to internalize them. I could share my experiences with others about what I've read and what they read. That was heartwarming, because we were like-minded seekers for truth. And then I realized, well, okay, these nuggets of truth are growing, and I was just seeking more and more. And I was finding it outside of that. I was finding it outside of that and learning on my own. Those nuggets are essential. And I understand what you're saying, that sometimes we need to have that validation that we're learning it, we're understanding it, we're sharing it. It is a lovely experience, the Urantia book. It is a very uplifting experience, and we want to exchange that experience with others. But we move on. You know, I realized they were nuggets of truth, and there were more nuggets of truth I needed to know. And it was a stepping stone. It was definitely a stepping stone. And a lot of the nuggets, I mean, we cannot eradicate the organizations, the religious organizations that are around. What would be ideal if we could thread or weave those nuggets of truth within those religions, and even evolutionize those religions. But that's where the difficulty lies. That's the difficulty Jesus had, was weaving in the nuggets of truth of what was organized around his time. And he suffered dearly for that. Today, I don't think we would suffer as we would suffer the way Jesus did. But it's to take those... No, I don't think we would. I don't think so. We might suffer in people, you know, condemning us or telling us we're sacrilegious or calling us names. I mean, you know, that might be the only thing. But we have to let the ego, we have to push that aside, and we have to push our fear aside, because we know, not that we are the utmost in knowing the nuggets of truth, but once we have those nuggets of truth, yes, we do have a responsibility, I believe, in some way. in allowing those nuggets of truth to get out there. Maybe not so much in words or in a ministry, but looking at what is already there and what needs to be in place so that the truth is just available. It's there. I mean, it's just there. Not to get into any one situation here, but I'm originally from Boston, and that's where the Christian Science people started, you know, in Boston. And what they did to get the word out there about their concepts was to have reading rooms. And I had the idea that if, you know, the Urantia organization established some kind of reading rooms where you had accessibility to the Urantia book and you read it. And you had the availability of those nuggets of truth. And people would meet periodically and talk about these nuggets of truth, not in a duality kind of way, but in a connective way where the truth was revealed, how the truth was revealed to them and how that's going to grow into something for them. So that you have a different kind of presentation. It's not, I know this, or I'm going to argue this, or this is that, and no, that's not correct. I think those nuggets of truth are individual truths. And the only way we become spiritually advanced is by seeing that people have their truth. They've learned something. They have some truth, or they're evolving in their own way spiritually, and allow them to do that. This is where organized religion has its problems, because it says, no, you can't do that. You have to go through A, B, C, and D process before you are spiritually this, that, and the other. And I think
it sounds like you're talking, though, about a very formalized and crystallized religion.
I'm not talking about formalization. I'm talking about random situations where if somebody is inspired to seek the truth, it's there. I mean, that was just a thought that crossed my mind. If you want to get the word out there and you want these nuggets of spiritual truth to be available to people, well, it's there. And if there's somebody in the room who knows and they want to discuss or open up this, you know, these revelations to other people, it is there, because I think that's what a lot of Urantia readers are looking for. They want to say, I've read the book and, wow, I've had this experience. And they want to share that experience with others so that others might want to read the Urantia book, but not for, you know, not to crystallize, but to keep it organic, to keep it open and evolutionize the spiritual process as it's meant to be. And you know what I mean? That's the way it unfolded for me and for other people that I have come across that have read the Urantia book. They've had the same experience. And I think, you know, that's, you know, ministries, I think, I'm not sure.
I have several other callers, and I'd like to get everyone on if I could.
All right.
But I so appreciate your comments. Thank you so much for calling in. And
oh,
I hope
you're welcome.
Did you want to continue to listen on the line, or do you want to
I'm reading the chat room as well, and there have been several comments that I'm resonating with. So I'm going to continue here. Thank you very much. Thank you.
God bless you, dear.
Callers, I would... I would comment here that, first of all, I think we keep getting dragged back into the question of whether a religion should be started from the Urantia book, which is incorrect. The religion has already started. It's already decades old. We're already organized. We're already doing things. We're already gathered around what we consider to be a celestial revelation. We have projects. We worship. We pray. We wish to promulgate this message throughout the world. We have all kinds of things going on. The day for asking whether this thing should create a religion is about 80, 90 years too late. We already have it. It's already here. And I think one of the problems, one of the things that confuse people is there seems to be a sort of a mix-up. The Urantia book describes the religion of personal experience, and then it describes its needed twin, which is the socialized version of that, where we can work in, you know, group functioning to achieve goals. And like Jesus said in that quote I read you, it is the bringing together of all these divergent interpretations of religious questions and socializing this religion so that it becomes effective and appealing. Now, there are people in the, you know, your regular dogmatic churches and religious institutions which don't have personal experience. And that is what the Urantia book warns about most strongly, that without the religion of personal experience, what you have is only form, ritual, ceremonial, and dogma, which is a nightmare, according to the Urantia book and its teachings. Then on the flip side, we have people in the Urantia book community who believe that it should only be a religion of personal experience and should never be socialized. But actually what the revelation itself teaches is a religion of personal experience together with a proper and effective socialized organization. And it tells us that the socialized version must never supplant the religion of personal experience. In other words, it's giving us what's most important. So it seems to be a combination of both that the Urantia book calls for, and then it tells us on how to adjust it and how to prioritize it. It's not either or. It's both done properly.
Somebody on the board just said, so a ministry versus a religion, which I think is fairly accurate. I mean, based on how we often define religion as being, oh, so you believe that, well, I believe this, you know. We often define our religion as what makes us different instead of what makes us the same. And I think that's part of the problem. The thing we need to do is define religion as what makes us the same. The fact that we all are indwelt by the Spirit of God, the fact that we all have the same spiritual destiny, that's what makes us the same. That is our religion. That, you know, as a group, that should be our religion, not what sets us apart, but what brings us, what draws us together as one family of God.
I remember Jesus saying, when the apostles said, when will we all think alike, he got rather disturbed and said, you know, it's not uniformity, it's unity in our spiritual lives.
Right. And I take your point so to heart, Bayes, that we are a religion. I have felt, and I continue to feel, that the minute the revelators left this planet, they left that book here, the minute they pulled out, it ceased to be a revelation, revelatory, and became evolutionary. It became an evolutionary religion the moment they left. And that's, you know, same with Jesus. I mean, and you know that those early believers, what did they do? They band together. Why did they do that? They band together for a reason. They created those brand new churches 2,000 years ago so that when believers came, when they were converted to the religion of Jesus, which later became the religion about Jesus, but as they became believers in Jesus, they had somewhere to go. People, yeah. Like-minded believers who shared that with them, and they banded together, and that's how they were able to change the world. If they had been ultra-individualistic out there all over, never coming together to mobilize their efforts, they wouldn't have been able to change the world. That's what Paul and Peter did. They drew those people together, and they made those compromises they need to make to get the critical mass they got. And, you know, so to me, I fully believe that someday some big religion is going to take the Urantia book on. And they're probably going to say to us, thank you very much. You guys have done us a great service, but we'll take it from here. I really believe that. It's just a matter of time.
Wow. We'll see.
I also think that there's another consideration here, which we may need to take a look at, and that is that some people, for many people, their religion is a very private experience. And some people are much more private than others. Some people are much more extroverted and expressive, and others who are naturally more reticent and more introverted might not feel quite the same urge to socialize their religious experience as those of us who are more extroverted feel. Anybody on the discussion group today that is introverted who still feels the need to socialize their religion, I'd be very interested in your opinion on that.
I think that another thing that causes problems is the definition of the world religion. I think a lot of what I've noticed is a lot of people use that word to mean a very crystallized, formalized, ritualistic, ceremonial, dogmatic kind of thing. So when they say we don't want it to become a religion, I mean, it's already a religion. Why are you here? You know, you're talking about what you believe with other like-minded individuals. You pray. I mean, we already have this religion. But I think what they're against is this problem with normal institutionalized religions where it just becomes this vacuous, hollow, ceremonial outfit that has little to do, if any, with personal, spiritual experience. In fact, it oftentimes goes against it. Doesn't want you to personally experience God. Don't ask any questions.
Almost all of our religions that we might have experienced here are religions of ecclesiastic authority.
And that's put a real bad taste in people's mouth. But what the Urantia book, what the Revelators themselves teach, is that even ritual has its place. Didn't Jesus give us the cup of remembrance? Isn't that a ceremonial? That's a ceremonial. That's a ritual. Christ himself gave us a ritual. The Urantia book says that you're not supposed to destroy all ritual. You're supposed to reform it. And then it sets about telling us that it doesn't want these cramping, ridiculous ceremonials where you're just sitting people do this voodoo magic abracadabra stuff for 2 hours without getting anything done about, getting people closer to God and having a personal religious experience. And if we ever go in that direction, I'll be the first one to pull out. I would never tolerate that. But there is a right way and a wrong way to do it. And if you listen to the Revelation and do it the right way, then it's telling you how to make it effective and appealing so that it survives and it's just not a bunch of people scattered around the world reading the book by themselves. That's not going to do anything.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
You want to take another caller, Paula?
Yeah. 603, you've been on for a while. Area code 603.
Hi, Paula and Kristalyn. This is Lou in New Hampshire.
Hey, Lou.
I realize you have a lot of callers, so I will try to be uncharacteristically brief. You guys get huge points, really, for taking on this enormous subject matter with its potential explosiveness and divisiveness. And I just want to congratulate you on the courage for that. I really appreciated Dave's starting out by calling the kingdom or the fellowship the invisible brotherhood. I think that helped put a lot of people at ease when we think of brick-and-mortar cathedrals. And I also appreciated Paula's distinguishing between a socialized religion versus an institutionalized religion. All these little pieces help to build this case. And I further want to compliment Dave on his building of this. Before he allows you to take any callers, anticipating what they might be about and hoping to maybe defuse some of them, building this case of many, many, many quotations for why we really might want to do this sort of thing. So this has been a great show. You know, there's a line in the Urantia book, and I'm going to paraphrase very liberally here, that might have affected many readers' attitudes about creating this sort of religion. And it goes something like this. Because we have the Spirit of God dwelling within us, each of us has immediate, anywhere, anytime, access to deity. And they go on to say, or maybe I've read this into it, that because of that, we really don't need ordained priesthoods and sacraments and candles and incense and stained glass and bells and whistles and everything else. Now, having said that, in the very same breath, you need to say, however, if the level of one's faith is such that these things facilitate their approach to God, well, let no man take these things away from them. So what I've enjoyed about this conversation is how they've put forth, quotations he read, put forth both the benefits and the pitfalls. This is not a black or a white thing. It's a black and a white thing, and it's got things we should aspire to attain, and it's got pitfalls we should watch out for. And, you know, I still have a subject matter for this show, and I thought my thoughts might have been fairly made up on this, but this show more than once has expanded, if not even changed my thinking on something. And I really think you're doing a good job of putting forth the argument here. I'm going to tell you a story because it's germane to this. Again, I'm going to try to be brief. I went to a Halloween party dressed as a priest. I had a chasuble and stole, and I wore my three circles medallion. But what I did not know was that the host of the party was a bishop in the liberal arm of the Catholic Church, and he and I got along very well, and I happened to learn that his chapel is right across the street from where I live. So I went to a service of his last Sunday, and I intend to go tomorrow. Now, I haven't been to a Catholic mass in a few years, not a lot, but a few, and this liberal service had a greatly streamlined liturgy that focused on worship, not about repentance or our unworthiness, but about worship and the love of God. And his sermon was absolutely beautiful. And my eyes were really opened here because within his sermon, he embraced many, many, many parallel precepts that we would think are exclusive to the Urantia book. And then it occurred to me that through one's own meditative mentations and one's own teachings of thinking led by the Spirit of Truth, of course other people are going to come to these same conclusions. And even though this is not a Urantia church, and even though the caliber of fellowship was not quite the same as I might get from a Urantia function or gathering, it was pretty damn good, I have to say that. And I was pleased to have discovered this new community right across the street from me, and I intend to go to church again tomorrow. Is it a Urantia church? Not quite, but it's highly progressive and liberal in its thinking, and I think that perhaps there are many readers out there who hold to the teachings of the book and yet find some degree of fellowship in the churches that are out there extant.
I think it's also important to note here, too, Lou, that many contemporary theologians, especially those that have influenced some of the movements in Christianity in the past 10 years, have been profoundly influenced by the Urantia book itself. Mm. Not all of them will openly acknowledge where they got their train of thinking or their train of thought. And they will frequently quote other sources that parallel the sources in the Urantia book.
Well, you know,
but,
this is not...
Remember, too, that at the point of the revelation coming into being, it states quite plainly that more than 1,000 human sources were utilized. They were taking the highest theological and philosophical thought of the 20th century and probably the 19th century as well, and plugging it in where appropriate in order to make the Urantia book more humanly accessible. So I think there are hundreds of thousands of Urantia books out there. We have no way of knowing which theologians and philosophers have been influenced by it, but we can sort of get a feel for it by the language that they use,
right,
in their own upstepping of the church or philosophy or the synagogue or the mosque that they're currently in.
You know, Crystal, this
and
is yet, not
and the Urantia
like...
book says that absolutely will happen. Because why? Because of evolution. Of course.
Right.
Thought is leading people forward progressively.
Right.
And you will see more and more teachers and churches and theologians stating these truths courageously, because the time has come to state them courageously. We just can't keep this light under the bushel anymore.
What were you going to say, Lou?
Oh, I was going to say, your comment about there are probably more mainstream preachers and ministers out there who have been influenced by the Arrange Book than we know about is not dissimilar to a comment Dr. Halverson made telling us that there are far more scientists with university tenure who are influenced by the book than would ever come out of the closet and admit that openly. Nonetheless, they allow the teachings of the book to permeate and influence their classroom teaching.
Exactly.
Good point.
Yeah, I have one other comment. Let me let you take another caller, Paula. It's about Crystalline's comment about parenting. I think we've barely scratched this, and I think this is really, really important. The baby boomer generation has largely raised their children without religion. The wonderful, comforting rituals of going to somewhere every Sunday and then coming home to that nice roast beef dinner or whatever. And because of that, we got a lot of youth out there who, I think, here's my theory on this, because they haven't been poisoned, if you will, by a lot of flawed thinking and bad theology, when the natural desire for God does awaken within this generation of kids, they're going to find God, what I call God without the garbage. They're going to find the real God. And once they're motivated, this is an army of souls whose power I don't think we can appreciate yet.
Very good point.
Very good. Thanks, Lou.
Okay.
That sounds familiar, Lou. God without the garbage.
I'm going to hang on and listen, Paula, but I'm done here. Thank you.
Okay, brother. Thank you so much. Great comments. Okay, we have one more caller that hasn't talked to you guys, and then I'm going to turn it back over to you, Bates. Can you hang around for a little while longer?
Sure.
Oh, cool. Area code 352, you're on the Cosmic Citizen. 352,
hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, this is Alan from Washington, D.C.
Hi, Alan.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And been following the show. I've been reading the book for about 6 years. I'm also a member of a church that I joined also about 3 years ago, and they all both kind of came about around the same time. But my question is, you know, we've been talking a lot today about forming, you know, a religion around the Urantia book, and one thing that I've been thinking a lot about in the past year or two was, you know, what I guess the evolution of what's going to bring us forth, or the future of spirituality. You know, in paper 196, it talks a lot about the future of, you know, spirituality on the planet and what's next in terms of evolving. And they mention a lot of things that what would be needed. And I was thinking, are there any, you know, whether it's forming a new religion around the Urantia book, and I know that one of the speakers was talking about it's been going on for the past, you know, for quite a while, but is there any maybe more, and I mentioned this on the chat room, any mainstream churches that are out there that might be incorporating a lot of the teachings of the Urantia book, or has that been increasing a lot in the past few decades? Because it seems like one thing that really is needed is a lot of infrastructure to help you know, people live the life that the Urantia book is saying that you need to live. It's kind of hard to do that if it's just a book, you know, you and a book, and then maybe a few, you know, study groups here and there, and it's very important to have like a lot of like a institutionalized organization that's built around that to help you live that life. And and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I read the book a lot, but I also have the church that I go to kind of get the best of both worlds, so to speak. But I was wondering if you all had any thoughts on, you know, what, other than creating a new religion around the Urantia book, what's, you know, other than, you know, taking the truths that are in the book and incorporating them through these other mainstream religions, do you guys have any thoughts on any churches that might be out there that are more
well,
beneficial?
I would like to respond to that, if it's okay with you, Paula.
Of course.
I have noticed that there are some. You know, Lou was just talking about the Catholic Church in his neighborhood. The Catholic Church has been in the last probably 30 to 40 years has been going through some really dramatic changes. And it's always been one that has been willing to incorporate the culture of whatever area they're trying to, I don't know if you'd say, evangelize or infiltrate, more so than many other Christian sects. There's also, you know, a pretty profound emergent movement within Christianity that's definitely influencing the youth of the more conservative churches. They've had fairly large numbers which have broken free from what they consider as ecclesiastical authority, and they have moved towards more of a home churching environment, you know, more like a study groups that your ranch book readers would be familiar with. And that has really changed the culture without completely losing their existing infrastructure. This is a movement that I see as only just having sort of reared its head. It hasn't really matured yet into a set of rituals or liturgy, but many of them can many of them are keeping parts of their traditional liturgy. And then I think there's also the LDS, the Mormon Church, which we know we have a lot of Urantia book readers who are coming from that tradition. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop for a minute. So talk amongst yourselves.
Could I say something?
Sure, please. Go ahead.
I went to Unity for about 10 years, and I've done presentations to Unity about the Urantia book. They're pretty open to things like the Urantia book, and I've heard that there's a lot of folks out at Unity Village, a lot of the teachers, that are closet readers. And this person on the telephone has said, has rung a bell with me, because I've been thinking a lot about what the Urantia book says, the hour is striking for presenting to the religions of the world, including Christianity, you know, the new gospel about Jesus, you know, which is what I was
the
doing
new
sort of
with, of Jesus.
Yeah, what I was doing sort of with the videos that I had made about Jesus. And I think, you know, this, we need to have our own cult probably, but we're going to have a relationship someday with the Christian church. And I would like it for it to be a productive, creative, friendly relationship. And I think we need to begin to introduce the Christian churches to the concepts in the Urantia book. And it may even begin to a reformation within the Christian churches, the concepts from the Urantia book. That would be a wonderful thing. That's what I wanted to say.
There's one thing I was going to mention that, you know, I really liked the Urantia book because it really satisfied an intellectual part of, like, truth. I mean, there's a lot of details. It's not, you know, you have as much in-depthness as you would ever want about what's, you know, what is truth. But then, you know, I was thinking, you know, if I ever had to choose between the book and, like, a church, and I've kind of gone back and forth, but I think in the past I've really kind of settled on, like, I really do need the infrastructure around the church to help live that life, because it really stresses a lot on, like, service and, you know, you all mentioned ministry. Like, that's, like, you have to have those things. You have to be willing to serve your fellow human beings and minister to them. And it's hard to really get that from just, you know, just the book itself. And that was just something I was curious to see in the future, what, you know, in terms of if it did, you know, if the organization did build up around book, as was talked about today, you know, how much infrastructure would there be there to help people live that life? Or if it's more just these truths just assimilating into all these different religions that are out there and using their infrastructure. I think one of the people on the show said earlier about, you know, maybe there's a church that'll come along that'll just take the book and say, you know, thanks for the work that you've done. You know, we'll take it from here, and then just assimilate all the truths that are in the book into all the infrastructure they have. And that was something that, you know, I thought was really good. But that's pretty much all my thoughts.
Well, on that note, Alan, I think that LDS is very well positioned to possibly be that church that does that.
This Crystal Lynn?
Yes, this is Crystal Lynn. And one of the reasons I believe that is that it's one of the few movements in the world currently that is very dynamic and growing, that has a very strong community, and where that community is very focused on the home and the development of children, educating children in their spirituality. It also believes in the possibility of additional revelation, which some of the Christian churches staunchly do not believe in. That makes it open for receiving some new revelation that could possibly really stabilize some of the things about LDS that haven't been particularly stable. And does anybody
have any
thoughts on that?
Well, I have to state that, to me, the obvious thing about what you've said, Alan, is the fact that Bayes and this group are trying to create an overt church experience for those of us who want to overtly hold up these ideas and ideals as depicted in the Urantia book. And I think, you know, we can go to, it's like Lou said, you know, he went to his Catholic church. You can go to LDS. You can go to Mark Erickson on the board said he goes to Universal Unitarian Universalist, and he gets fed there. And I think that's all great. But I also think it's just as important to have our expression openly. And the reason why that I got involved in Urantia organizations, and I've become deeply involved in them, the reason I sought out study groups and other like-minded individuals was so I could express the joy in my heart over knowing these truths openly, without apology, without having to water it down or cloak it or keep it covert. I wanted to openly express my joy at the fact that God still talks to us and reveals truth, and isn't it profound, and isn't it wonderful, and look what it says. I didn't want to have to bootleg this stuff in every instance. So, Dave, that's why I applaud you so much, and Dick, both of you, for wanting to do this overtly. You know, is there any reason why we shouldn't have that opportunity to worship together based on these truths and nothing but these truths? You know what I mean? Just glory in them. Absolute revel in them, you know?
Amen.
That's why I think this is so important. That we have these opportunities as believers. Some of us can be fed by these other religious organizations, and that's great. But some of us want to be open about the way we feel about this thing. And I think that's perfectly great and noble and worthy as well.
Well, don't you think it depends, though, on the family culture that you're in? I mean, if, for example, Paula, you're acknowledging the Urantia book or becoming part of a Urantia religion, let's say, if by doing that you were going to be shunned by your entire family and your children, your parents, your sisters and brothers, if that was going to be part of your experience, it might cause you to pause about whether or not you really wanted to pay the cost. We were just reading in study group last week about the sermon Jesus gave about really being ready to really pay the price.
Count the cost.
Count the cost of being an apostle or right. at that time.
And what I would say in answer to that is that it's just a matter of the tyranny of either or and not the joy of both and. I mean, that's my point, I guess. I'm happy if people can have a choice. They can choose not to overtly associate with the Urantia book, and I'm fine with that. But why can't they choose to overtly associate with it? That's my point.
I'm a both and person, personally.
Yeah, me too.
But I also am a second generation Urantian. So, of course, I don't risk losing my family, my immediate family, by coming out and overtly preaching this new revelation. I also feel that while I want to be very much involved in ministering in this new in religious environment, I also continue to minister to people who are very traditional and very ecclesiastically bound. I make no boundaries, and as I believe you don't either.
No.
So I do feel that it has to be sort of a both and.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point that we're getting at here, is that it's about that other opportunity now to have an open religious gathering that is uniquely ours, and that nobody has to apologize to anybody about it. I mean, you know, there's no apology necessary, and that's the beauty of our conferences. And I think what these churches are doing then is giving us an opportunity to do that in more of a permanent way. It's just what Bay said earlier. Let's pray together. You know, any day of the week, let's come together and pray together. Let's have some place to come where we can pray with each other. You know,
Lou and sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Lou and was it Alan? I think they perfectly illustrate what we've been trying to say. Here are two Urantia book readers, deep believers, who are forced to choose between reading the book or going to a church that teaches many things that go against their beliefs. And there is that void, which is what we're trying to do through UBIM.org. And I encourage you, gentlemen, and others who are listening, to come and have that experience. It may be not perfect. It may not be personal. It may be not, you know, you're not sitting there in a church, but at least you'll be with groups of people that believe at the level that you believe. You know, what you guys are talking about is trying to put new wine in old skin, and it doesn't work. It bursts. This new revelation is new wine. It's not going to fit in evolutionary religion of any type. I don't know about you, but personally, if I sit in a church and they start talking about how God had to sacrifice his son and how his blood had to be shed before humanity could be forgiven, I'm going to walk out. That's not a part of my belief system. It offends me. It offends me. Apologize? We should apologize? They should apologize for teaching such nonsense. We have the greatest teaching, the greatest revelation in the history of this world. And we're going to go try and compromise and go through a church that's teaching evolutionary stuff? Not for me. That's what we're trying to do with UBIM.org. There is absolutely no reason why we should have to compromise this way. I don't agree with it at all. I won't stand for it. And God willing, we're going to be able to create that same type of environment. What we're doing is following exactly what the Urantia book teaches about what this sort of socialization process should look like as far as the education, the ministry, the worship, the prayer, how it should feel, how it should taste, how it should sound. We're following it, you know, word by word, to the letter. And that's what we've created. I encourage you to check it out pretty soon, maybe even starting next week. We'll make announcements on the site. There's an events calendar on the site where you'll be able to see everything that's going on. And I hope pretty soon it's going to be very, you know, full of things that are going on, and we'll be able to share in each other's works, presentations, lectures, worship, whatever. And hopefully, in time we will be able to share that same kind of feeling, community feeling, without having to resort to go to somebody else's church. And that's all I have to say.
You know, Bates, that was perfect because we're down to 11 seconds. That was a great last word. And I want to get in there real quick that the Spiritual Fellowship has a site too, thespiritualfellowship.org. I've posted it on the board a couple times, though, for you, Dick. And
Thank you.
God bless you guys for a great show. It was just as lively as I knew it would be. And I just so appreciate the contribution you both have made in many years of service with the Urantia book. And we'll keep moving forward.
And thank you, Lee and Alan, for calling in and sharing your feelings with us. Reese, thank you, too, for calling in from New Orleans. And George, you're always a joy.
One caller we didn't get to take, area code 804. Sure, sorry about that. But hopefully we'll get you the next time you call.
God bless you all.
Thank you so much.
You
all right. Goodbye.
Con Dios.
Goodbye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye. Con Dios.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.